This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. My guest today, you are just going to love. He's a former riding master in the Household Cavalry. He's ridden for Her Majesty the Queen, and he's ridden around badminton. In 2009, Richard was appointed performance manager for the British dressage team, including London 2012 and Rio 2016 Olympics. And 2 years ago, he was appointed performance manager to the British eventing team. So I'm super excited to welcome Major Richard Waygood on the podcast today. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm so excited. This is our first episode of 2019, and what a guest we have for you today. His name is Major Richard Waygood, MBE, and he's speaking at the International Eventing Forum, which is why he's our guest today. And wait until you hear what Richard's done. How are you, Richard?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Well, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
No, looking forward to it. I'm intrigued to what questions you're going to ask me.
Well, it's not so much questions. I think we're just nosy people that we like to find out a bit about your life, really. And when I look at, when I always do some research when I'm doing these podcasts to find out a bit more about our guests. And you are everywhere because, well, you're an ambassador for The Brook, which is an incredible charity. I think they do some great work. You are performance manager for the British eventing team. You've been chef to keep. Your team have won so many gold medals in the Olympics. I could just go on and on and on, but I don't think you've ever done a podcast before, so I feel like I've knocked one on your list.
Well done. I can't wait. Go on then.
well, let's start with your early years. I mean, you've gone from being in the army to riding for the Queen. Can you fill in the bits in the middle? How did that happen? Tell me, when you were in the army, what was it that got you hooked on horses that you thought, I've got to have this as my career?
Well, I joined the army at 16 years old, straight from school, basically. And my father, dad was a gamekeeper, but he had a real passion for horses. And when I actually went to the recruiting office in those days, there was this great big sign that said, join the army and see the world. Mm. So I ended up joining the army and sweeping the world in the Household Cavalry. So, we kind of arrived not really knowing what I was getting into. But I knew I was going to a mounted regiment and I knew that Dad would be thrilled. So I came home really excited, telling them that I've joined the Household Cavalry. And then I arrived at the Guards Depot and did a year at the Guards Depot when I was 16. And that was really sort of teaching how to be a soldier and how to march and salute and lots of days spent on the ranges shooting. I arrived at Knightsbridge almost a year or just over a year later to start my 20-week riding school in those days. And I spent the next 20 weeks basically learning how to ride. And on day six, week one of day six, we literally got on our horses and we rode from Knightsbridge in London down to Windsor 21 miles later. We didn't even know it was coming.
Oh, my goodness.
No, it was fascinating.
So what can you take yourself back to that time? What was going through your mind? I mean, 21 miles for me now would be, well, I just wouldn't do it. It'd scare the life out of me. I mean, at 16, with no idea what you're doing or how to ride, what was going through your head?
Well, we did 6 weeks at Knightsbridge, first of all. And then, like I say, we rode to Windsor. And we then, when we got to Windsor, we did the next 10 weeks in Windsor. And it was quite, especially with an army saddle, they're like, you know, as hard as a tabletop. And we were quite uncomfortable by the time we got to Windsor. And then our next 10 weeks spent in Windsor, and we did what we call the Khaki Pass out, where we walk, trot and canter as a ride, as a group. And then we do an individual exercise in walk, trot and canter. And then from there, we'd go down the jumping lane with our hands on our heads, removing our jackets, saluting to the left, no stirrups, and pass out in front of the commanding officer. And then we'd rode back to Knightsbridge, where then we spent 4 weeks learning how to ride in all the ceremonial uniform. And at the end of that 4 weeks, we did a big grand passing out parade in front of an invited dignitary and in front of our families as well. So, it was quite a moment. And then that really set me up for the rest of I got the bug then, really, the equestrian bug. Mm. And I then was very lucky. I rode on all sorts of ceremonial parades, the Queen, the Queen's Birthday Parade, Trooping of the Colour, the Royal Wedding with Charles and Diana, and all sort of state open in the Parliament, a lot of state visits. But while I was doing all of that, I sort of made my mind up that I wanted to become a riding instructor. And the riding instructors were affectionately known as the Blue Mafia, because they wore blues all the time, and but they were quite a strict lot. But then at the same time, I sort of got my first taste when I went on the riding instructor's course. I got my first taste of eventing, and my next, well, I had two aspirations, or two dreams. One was to become the riding master, and the other one was to be to ride around badminton.
And you've done both.
No, it was great. I sort of set those as my targets. And then over the next sort of, I spent 30 years in the Life Guards Household Cavalry, so 30 years. And when I sort of set my goal on becoming riding master and badminton, and I always remember my second badminton. I had a good first badminton, and my second one, I was really determined that before I'd even got there, I was going to go all the quick ways and hadn't even walked the course that I was going to, and I was going to get into the time. And a few weeks before badminton, I went in front of my commanding officer, and I went in front of the commanding officer to basically get my confidential report. And he asked me, he said, Richard, what aspirations do you have left? And I said, Colonel, I want to be on equestrian sport. With that, he looked at me and said, why do you want to be on equestrian sport? And I said, Colonel, if I've been on equestrian sport, it means that more than likely I've won badminton and I've ridden on a team. And he said, I like the way you're thinking. Mm. About, you know, 3-4 weeks later, I arrived at badminton. I was going all the quick ways, hadn't even walked the course, and I was going to make the time. And it rained and it rained and it rained for about 3 weeks. Well, anyway, I got as far as the lake, which was 3 from home in that particular year, got as far as the lake, and I jumped into the lake and the horse didn't join me. Horse was tired, and I should have gone the long way, but I didn't have a flexible strategy. All I had was plan A. So long story short, I got back to the horse box to pick up my mobile phone, and there I found a text from my commanding officer. Said, well done, Richard. It looks like you're going to make a question of sport, but for what happened next?
Brilliant.
So that taught me a valuable lesson. And that those lessons were, A, have a very flexible strategy, and B, ride what's underneath you, ride with feel, not by numbers.
I have heard the saying, you ride the horse that you're on, but you also need to ride the horse that you're on depending on what time of year it is, whether it's spring grass or not, depending on what feed you're feeding them.
Yeah, lots of variables. Yeah. And as you know, in eventing, there's so many variables that, you need to, and it, you know, it's has its risks, and you need to take those risks out where possible. Yeah.
So if you don't mind me taking you back to your original 20-week plan, I mean, I just think that's the most incredible strategy for anybody learning to ride. And I kind of wish we had those courses available now, because it's given you confidence. It's taught you how to ride. It's taught you how to have a relationship with a horse and a bond. It's almost like, plus looking after the care, it's almost like a crash course of how to be a horse person. And obviously to be an exceptional horse person, you need years of experience and you're constantly learning. But it's interesting that when you had to pass out, there were certain elements of riding that you had to do that then later came into a musical ride. Is that where you got your ideas from to come up with a musical ride for the Household Cavalry?
Yeah, the musical ride was, I really enjoyed the ride. And I'd taken over the ride after really had gone through a bit of a slump. And it was still a great, great spectacle and a great performance, but it just needed to move a bit with the times. So we had lots of county shows, fantastic, but the indoor bookings and the big sort of on the big stage was really drying up a little bit. So the first thing I did, really, I got all the boys together and said, we really need to do something about this. So I empowered them straight away, and I said, I want every idea you possibly got. Well, they came back with hundreds of ideas. And of those hundreds of ideas, there was probably only two or three. But those two or three were fantastic ideas. And we did everything from, you know, we changed the music completely for the indoor shows. And more often than not, a couple of times I had a live rock guitarist and a violin pair, believe it or not, who we've used Bond, the group Bond, their music, so sort of modern classical violin music. And we did the ride to live music, and gosh, that made a huge difference. And things like galloping out the arena with the flags of Land of Hope and Glory at the end. I can remember walking out of a production meeting quite late at night at Horse of the Year show and seeing all those flags flying around the front of the NEC, and that made me think that's what we want in the finale. And we literally added them in for the following day, and the crowd went absolutely wild. So that's become a little bit of a sort of signature feature for the ride now. They do that every performance. And off the back of really changing the music and lots of other bits and pieces, bringing it up to date, we suddenly found ourselves going all over the world and everywhere, from the from Abu Dhabi to Oman to the Frozen Lake in St. Moritz. I mean, we performed on the Frozen Lake, which was quite amazing.
Wow. Gosh, how did you get through health and safety? I mean, I know it's not Britain, so it's probably a bit easier, but...
I can remember the first day that we rode on the lake, and we rode out onto the lake, and there was a chap out there... putting the fencing up, basically, for, because bearing in mind on the lake, they use the lake as a car park. They use it as a polo pitch. It's got grandstands on the lake, and it's also got the VIP hospitality tent on there. Mm. And we were riding across the first time on the lake to go and rehearse. And, well, it was more of a familiarisation. And as we were riding across, poof, the ice started cracking. There was really loud, like, rifle shots, cracks. And I halted the boys, boom, and we got the drum horse and everything. And I am, whoa, ride halt. And everybody was motionless. And the ice kept making these really sharp cracks. So I walked very tentatively over to this chap who was putting this fence up, and in sort of broken sort of in English. And he spoke back to me in broken Swiss. And he explained that if the ice was making that noise, it was safe. It meant that the ice was really hard and it was really frozen solid. He said, when the ice doesn't crack, he said, that's when it's turning slushy and starting to melt. So that was a big relief when we rode on the lake there from then on in. But no, that was so cold in the rehearsals that with the helmets, the boys had to put Vaseline just on the end of their noses and on their ears, because when the helmets were touching, it was sticking to their skin.
Oh no, painful. But interestingly, how did you stop the horses from slipping? Did they wear shoes, or would the shoes stick to the ice?
Well, no, it's a good question. I mean, believe it or not, the top, just the very top of the lake, they put a piece basher on there just to churn the ice up a little bit, or often it snowed on top, but just to churn that up. So it was manicured beautifully. And in some of the horses, they needed quite large studs, but most of them only had small studs in. As you'd use home here on what you'll consider to be good going cross country.
Oh wow! So okay, you've now got a love for riding, obviously, and you said you love the eventing side, but you ended up becoming a performance manager for the dressage team. What was it? How did that end up happening?
Well, it was a big gamble. I did 30 years, and I could have stayed a bit longer until I was 55, or I could have stayed theoretically for another 8 years. And I decided that, you know, you should leave everything while you're still wanted, and because it means you're still doing your job. And my mindset, it was time to go. I really loved the army. I'd have a most fantastic job, but it was the right time for me. And with regards to the dressage job, it was a huge gamble because, you know, historically, the performance manager, straight chef to keep, has always been from the sport and really had a good understanding. And for me to come in from the outside, like I say, was a gamble for me on a personal level. It was a huge gamble for dressage as well. Anyway, I stepped into the job and it was fascinating. I absolutely really enjoyed it. I learned so much. And most of my job at that time, really, the technical side was taken care of by coaches. And my job really was to look after and manage the character.
Oh, well, that's nice, because that's a lot about psychology, isn't it? And keeping the team together. And are you interested in psychology? Because you sound extremely positive. It's like you have your goals. And it was interesting to hear you speak earlier about not having a plan B. And now maybe you have other options, not just head for one. But you still sound like when you have your goal or your idea of where you want to be, you don't stop until you get there. So is there psychology that plays a part in that?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I mean, you know, dogged determination, I guess, but definitely. And I think with the sort of sports psychology side of things, I mean, when you look at coaches, you know, coaches become mentors, coaches become in lots of ways they've got to be really aware of you know, how to get the best out of people, manage people. So every coach at all levels, there's some sort of form of managerial skills, and they've got to understand people. So and then I think also, you know, on the sort of sports psychology side, you know, it works for some, doesn't work for others, but 99%, if not all, athletes will all have their own way, their own mental preparation. So whether that's, you know, lying on the bed before the night before the cross country and running through every undulation, every long way, every short way, and really preparing themselves. That is their form of sports psychology and mental preparation. So, you know, in all different levels, we in all different ways, I think we all engage, whether it means sitting down with someone who is actually going to give you advice or not, or whether you take on board and listen and read and do your own preparation. But we all use our own form of psychology.
And so I very much agree with you, and I'm loving the fact that you decided to become an instructor or a coach, as they're now called, because there's a real passion within you that you can hear and see. And I think when you're passionate about something, you just want to tell the world about it. So having the opportunity to share and educate and watch other people grow. How do you think you're competing, and the level, what level are you competing at right now?
The coaching, well, I am still competing, but you know, it's sort of 3-star level, so you know, not around badminton or birdie, and I still really enjoy the competing. I still compete because I really enjoy it, and I've got some nice, really nice horses and lovely owners. And also the competing keeps you in touch. It really keeps you in touch with the sport. You're on the coal face. Walking around the collecting arena in the show jumping, you learn so much. And the other thing, when I say it keeps you in touch, it really keeps you current and up to date with your coaching. Because there's often a time, I think, with coaching when you step away from the actual competing yourself, you can end up sort of distance yourself and forget a little bit what the rider's going through. Mm. And we go back to the sort of psychology side and the preparation side. And but then on the coaching side, no, I've always been fascinated with the coaching. And I really enjoyed, I love going to lecture demos, etc. Or where I'm really lucky is where I've been able in the dressage and the event and to go and do yard visits and watch other coaches coaching. And you know, you never stop learning. And it's one of those things, the more you think you know, the more you realize actually you don't know. And that's the same with horses. And you know, with any elite sportsman or sportswoman, you know, they must have an inquisitive brain, always wanting to know how, why, or what can I do better, or what can I learn. And that, I think with good coaches, they're exactly the same.
No, I agree. I think it's great. I've started to do my own exams. I've started to do exams myself. I'd love to be a coach. My problem is I'm not good enough. I couldn't compete myself. But I think for me, I'd like to teach youngsters, because I really love that excitement, you know, when you see a child and they are just want to be around the horse, and that they love that moment. And I really enjoy that bit. But I know that I wouldn't be good enough to, I don't think I'd even be able to jump myself, let alone try and coach somebody else to do that. But I'm very much looking forward to becoming a coach one day, hopefully within the next year, actually.
Very good. Yeah, I still teach quite a few. Well, I try, as long as I can fit them in, I try to do some pony clubs, because I think I really enjoy it. And, you know, again, it's passing something on. And again, I have a few children that come to me, but it's quite hard trying to fit everything in. But I still really enjoy coaching the pony clubs.
Mm. Oh, they're brilliant. I think the Pony Club's brilliant. I think it offers so much. Well, let's touch on what you are talking about at the International Eventing Forum. So you're doing a session called Direct Riding. Can you give us a little insight as to what you're going to be talking about, please?
Yeah, basically, we're going to work in the arena, obviously in the indoor school at Hartbury, and we're going to do a little bit of cross-country exercises, and some various different exercises to improve a balance, to improve the line, to improve the horse's understanding, and all of those key things. So we want to improve the way of going, providing the line to the fence and the rider sitting in balance, and all those ingredients together help give the horse options and understanding. So, and we'll do a few unusual lines, which are really good in training. And a little bit, you've got to be aware, you know, you have a training session and then sometimes you may test horses a little bit. And we'll see how we go with them, or we might ask them a few little questions. And really, I don't mind at all if anything, you know, if one makes a little mistake, runs out left, runs out right or whatever, because actually it's a really good talking point, because we shouldn't be frightened in training of breaking a few eggs to make your omelette. But at the same time, we've got to be careful that, you know, we don't want to teach horses how to run out. So, I don't want it all to go beautifully, swimmingly well. I'd like to see, a few little blips here and there so we can talk about them. They can be a great discussion point and we can go through the process that we put the wheels back on.
So what do you consider to be direct riding?
Well, it was I'm thinking here, my mindset is thinking riding from the leg and seat, and the hands are there purely to back up the leg and seat. So when you're riding from skinny to skinny, it's about the connection with the lower leg and sitting in balance in the middle of the horse. And really your hands are only there to back up the leg and seat. So we want to be direct from the leg and seat through your lines to the fences.
Mm, brilliant. I'm looking forward to that. And the riders that you're using, are they your students? Would we know them?
Yeah, so we've got, hopefully you will. I've got three riders that I help. We've got Kitty King.
Oh, amazing.
We've got Georgie Spence and we've got Frankie Rewarlo. So good riders. The reason I thought it'd be better if I sort of had three people that I've worked with and worked with a bit, and then we can sort of get a little bit stuck into it and take it with me. I've asked them not to bring, they're bringing sort of top end novice stroke intermediate horses. So really looking forward to it.
Oh, brilliant. Well, you wouldn't want me on it because you'd have loads of mistakes there and you'd have to teach me how to just be in balance. That would be a bonus. The way we've been going lately, it hasn't been working.
Well, you'd be surprised. It'd be a surprise what you can achieve in a short space of time, and a few key exercises and a few key things to focus on. And you'd be surprised how quickly you can change your balance and, be more in balance.
Well, aren't we grateful that they took that punt on you to be chef to keep all those years ago at the for the dressage, because now you've moved on to eventing, which is great. And I've got to ask you, did you ever make it onto the question of sport?
I did, actually, yeah. I was in the Middle East. It was been about 4 or 5 years later, and it wasn't actually to what happened next, but it was, I can't remember what it was anyway, but I got a call out there, or about 5 or 6 missed calls, and one call said, "You're on Question of Sport, you've made it." So that was, yeah.
Brilliant. And do you still stay in touch with the Queen? Because didn't you ride for her for a long time?
I was very lucky. I rode for Her Majesty for just over 15 years, really, with different horses and... that was a great, great privilege. And every now and again, I get an invite to somewhere, you know, it might be Wirral, Windsor Horse Show or wherever, where Her Majesty is. And it's great. And and I sat next to Her Majesty a few years ago at Royal Windsor Horse Show, and absolutely fascinating, because the Queen really knows her breeding so well. And you can just, when you talk about breeding, I often just sit and listen, because it's a real education. And obviously with the horses, the Queen's so passionate about her horses. Mm. And all horses, she's had involvement in so many different disciplines.
I just think she's amazing. And I kind of get a little bit defensive of her when people are, you know, sometimes you hear things, she shouldn't be riding, she hasn't got a hat, she's too old. And I think, oh my goodness, I feel like she's my granny, because she loves horses so much. If I could have a sit down with her for half an hour, I think it would just, then I've made it. That would be my epitome. So for you to have that opportunity, I think, to be able to connect with her, I think anyone that's on horses or loves horses straight away are going to connect with her much quicker, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And there's some common ground there, and like I say, I think the horses are Her Majesty's guilty pleasure, and they're a big part of her life, and you know what they've done for the equestrian world is outstanding. I mean, Royal Windsor Horse Show wouldn't be as it is now. That's actually in Home Park, and it's an incredible show. But the passion around horses is incredible. And I mean, Queen is the most amazing role model. Just unbelievable lady.
And did you actually get to go riding together?
Yes, I was very lucky. When the Queen rode in Windsor, if I was in Windsor at the time, I would go and hack out with Peter Pan, for example, or go and, ride. I was very lucky because I could go in and use the facilities within the castle. So that was fabulous to be able to go and do that. And sometimes I work the horses in front of Her Majesty.
Oh, wonderful. And what testament to you, Richard, as well, that you're riding and you're learning in all these phenomenal places. I mean, you know, the facilities, the equestrian yards, you just have everything. And I can imagine you still, well, I don't need to imagine, you still put so much back into the industry as well. Like, for example, teaching at Pony Club, I still would feel comfortable if I had a little tin pot yard that maybe didn't have many facilities. I would still know that I'd feel comfortable having you there because it's all about the learning and growing together, which I think is wonderful.
No, it is. And I mean, look, we're... I said this at the Home Coaches Day a few days ago. You know, storytelling is a large part of leadership and sharing good practice. And when you storytell, what we're really doing at the moment is you're sharing your experiences, you're sharing your mistakes so others can learn from them. And also at the same time, storytelling, as we are now, encourages interaction. So, yeah. It's about sharing the good times, sharing the bad times, and letting other people learn from your mistakes.
So if you can think of, which is I know going to be difficult, but if you can think of one lesson that you would share with others, what would it be?
Well, I think the one I used earlier, always have a flexible strategy. Otherwise, you end up in the lake.
Perfect. Oh, well, thank you so much for your time and for joining us on the Horse Hour podcast. We can still get tickets if we want to come and join you at the International Eventing Forum on February the 4th at Hartbury College. If we'd like more information on the forum, then head to internationaleventingforum.com, and you can also follow them on Twitter at Eventing Forum. Major Richard Waygood, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
No, very good and well done, and hopefully see you on the 4th of February.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget the International Eventing Forum is on Friday the 4th of February. So if you haven't got your tickets, then head over to internationaleventingforum.com to get your tickets straight away. You don't want to miss out, because not only is Major Richard Waygood going to be speaking, but you'll also hear from Adam Kemp. If you don't know who Adam is, most dressage enthusiasts do, then he's a highly sought after teacher, trainer and coach. Adam's career began at the Talon School of Equitation when he was just 16, and from that he's made his way into the elite band of teachers, of which there are only 50 worldwide. So we're looking forward to hearing what Adam's got to say at the forum. You'll also hear from international dressage rider and trainer Matt Frost. More information can be found at the website, or of course you can follow them at Eventing Forum. I hope you've had a really good time with your horse this weekend. Tell me, what have you been up to? I'd like to have a go at jumping this week, I think, at some point, because the weather's nice. It's been quite mild, hasn't it? It's going to get a little bit colder though as we head through to the weekend. Look at me sounding like a weather girl. But I do think these opportunities, while it's warm, we've got to get as much riding in as possible. And now that the daylight hours are longer, we have more time. My life has been so boring though. All I've been doing is poo picking. It's been the bane of my life for the last week. I've had so much to clear because I gave it a little break over Christmas and New Year, and I've decided to be a bit more committed this year. I'm going to do a little bit every day, and it's become like OCD. So keep going with that. Do share your pictures and your videos, things that you're up to with your horse, because I love seeing your journeys and you inspire me. and get me excited and wanting to do more with blackjack. So please keep the pictures and videos coming. Head over to our website, horsehour.co.uk, and of course Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Just use hashtag horsehour and tag us as well at horsehour. Hope you have a really good week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.